Okay, everyone. Welcome to the second call for Module 7, which is all about the coach's self-doubt. Yay! I know. So much fun. And today we're going to sort of shift gears a little bit. So last week we were talking more about how self-doubt shows up in our business. This week we're going to talk about client stuff, which is super important, I think. So just to talk about what we're going to talk about, we'll do a check-in from practice pods and your own reflections around what's been coming up since we looked at this last week. We'll revisit the aims of this module. We'll really dive into client practice stuff. I want to do some coaching with you around with some self-reflection and some peers work around how this stuff shows up. And I think this can be really crunchy, revealing, incredibly important and supportive work for us and for our clients. So I want to give you some support and some ideas for how you can do this in a way that just feels really good to you and feels appropriate for the kind of work that you're doing. Okay. And that will lead us nicely into some stuff for you to take away and play with a little more in study group on Thursday and in your own practice pods and self-reflections. Okay. So what's happening in your practice pods and your self-reflections? We've been talking about self-doubt in your business. Has anyone had any kind of surprises come up or just revelations? Are you noticing things? What would you like to share? And pour some water, excuse the loud noises. Anyone want to share? Yeah, Fiona, hi.
I've been on the self-doubt roller coaster this week. Actually, not this week, this fortnight, I would say. And it's been wild. But I feel like I've kind of settled now, partly because I actually did quite a big support audit and was like, what support do I need? What have I got? What do I need? What do I want more of? What's working? What's not working? And it was so helpful. So actually I've booked back in to see my therapist that I haven't seen for like 4 years and just called and was like, some stuff has arrived, I don't know what to do with it, help. And she was like, yeah, it's fine, book in, come see me. So
perfect. Yeah, I'm curious to know, Fiona, what of the four protectors, the critic, the martyr, the scapegoat, the bystander, what one do you most associate with?
Critic.
Nice. So what I would offer to you, because the critic's like, you're not doing enough, you can't do or be enough to be okay mm-hmm. and to feel safe. And so the tendency is to keep going and pushing and driving. What I love is that you're interrupting that pattern in such a healthy self way by saying, wait, just going to ask for help, which is, it's very much, you know, those experiments for the critic are mm-hmm. all about imperfection and compassion. And what I'm hearing you say is that you have really sat with what isn't working, what do I need? That is hugely self-compassionate.
So yeah, and bravo. That's been extra crunchy because I've got a healthy dose of martyr as well.
Nice. Yeah, cool.
But actually, the other thing that I really noticed, which Nicola's going to chuckle at me about, is there was a bunch of bystander happening, which I was like, I don't have a problem with bystander. It's not a thing for me. Yeah. But then actually around some things about money and kind of business processy stuff, it was the bystander like came and played with me. And I was like, oh, hi, what are you doing here?
Wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that I've noticed is that when we have a kind of over-functioning, comforting, shadow-comforting kind of protector, it's almost like we kind of go the other way. So if you, and I know this in my own experience, I go from overworking to overwhelm. It's like this lovely little Mobius loop that's working its way through. And I think that can happen as you may find that there is a preferred style of over and under functioning. So yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
Nice. Really, really thrilled that you're getting the support you need, Fiona. That's brilliant.
Thank you.
Nice. Anyone else having some stuff come up. This can happen when you shine a light on it. Start noticing it. All good. Anyone want to share anything? Okay. Awesome. Well, let's move into this this module's stuff. Hey, Normie, nice to see you. Iris, welcome. Make yourself at home. We're just getting started. We've just done a bit of a check-in, and now we're moving into this part of the module. So we're just going to revisit the aims of Module 7, just to make sure we know what we're dealing with today. Last week we talked about this question: where is self-doubt showing up in your coaching business? Like, as practitioners, where does this happen? Because it's going to be somewhere, right? And we talked about that, the business loop of plan, create, market, sell, deliver, reward. Self-doubt's going to show up in one or more of those spots, and that gives you an indication as to where there's some work to do, where there's some things to look at. And now, where is self-doubt showing up in your client practice? That's what we're going to look at in a bit more detail today. And the reason we're doing this, right, is that we start to understand and untangle from these beliefs, behaviors that really hold us back. When it comes to our client work, it's super important, because we start to minimize the entanglement that's inevitable. So when it's showing up in our business, we can get entangled with the folks we're marketing to and the projects we're creating, right? And how we reward ourselves and all of that jazz. When it's showing up in our client work, it's much more about the relationships and the dynamics and the power dynamics that can be at play within that dynamic of coaching, within that container. And I think because coaching has no requirement for supervision or any kind of support, you know, every other talking therapy requires practitioners to be supported in some way. I think that for us to just go, hey, we're human and we're going to have thoughts and feelings that are going to be totally off brand, may feel confusing, may feel shameful even, but until we accept those as normal, we can't really interrogate them or change them. And that will show up in different, those thoughts and feelings that are problematic for our coaching work to be really healthy. It's going to show up differently for all of us. But I want us to just bring this up onto the table and have a little look at it, okay? When we can do this untangling work, we understand, oh, that's where that's coming from. That's why this client feels difficult. We get to minimize that entanglement. It means that we can show up to our coaching work kind of from our healthy selves, really embodying self-belief, right? And what I mean by that is that our beliefs and our emotions and our behavior is coherent. It's kind of clean, right? We believe this thing about the client. You know, we believe this thing about the coaching container. We believe this thing about us. We believe this thing about the value of our work. Our emotions are connected to that in a really coherent way. And so we show up in ways that demonstrate how we're believing about this. It's when there is a kind of misfire where, you know, I'm behaving in one way, but I believe something else, there is this kind of incoherence, a little misalignment that happens. And that's where we get entangled. Yeah. So you could believe, or so you could be demonstrating, this is a judgment-free zone, but your belief is, you're boring me. We've talked about this 87 times, right? It's not a judgment-free zone. There's a misalignment there, right? And so being aware of the kinds of things that happen in that dynamic makes the coaching container safer. It makes it more productive. It makes it much more fun. It's not as energy sapping, because you're not having to work so damn hard, right? So remember we talked about the difference between business problems and protective beliefs. So business problems, able to be solved, usually need us to do something different, right? We need to put a payment plan in place. It's a business problem. Okay, I need to take money. I need a business, a payment plan, system in place. I do something different. I can learn how to do this or I can just outsource it. You can Google the answer. Easy peasy, relatively. Protective beliefs, on the other hand, are not things we can outsource. We have to heal them. We have to look at these things and understand why. You can't outsource to someone else why you're bored by your client. You have to look at that yourself. And it requires us to be different, right? We usually have to practice believing something new. And I think I gave this example last week is one of the beliefs that I practiced for 3 years. It's safe for people to not like me. 3 years of putting myself in the place of criticism, just offering up my preferences and opinions rather than shoving them down so that I could really believe that it is safe for me to, for people to not like me. It's okay. And what that, the energy that really embodying that belief frees up is just incredible. We have to experiment, right? That's how we heal those protective beliefs. Now, the thing is about business, when self-doubt's showing up in our business, I think we end up with a sort of, tends to be somewhere between 70 and 30 split, right? 70% protective beliefs, it might be for you 60 or 50%, and, you know, the rest are the business problems, right? We tend to have a pretty even-ish split, right? But when it comes to our coaching work with clients, I think that the number is much, much higher. And I'm just putting this out there. I think 95% of when our self-doubt shows up in client work, it's going to be from a protective belief. So if you're having self-doubt around your work with clients, my sort of belief is that it's going to almost always be a protective belief that needs looking at. So that means if you feel irritated or bored, you want to rescue your client, you want to convince them that they're more amazing than they believe, right? You want to blame them for the situation they found themselves in or why they're not doing the work that you've agreed they will do. All of that is going to come from our own protective beliefs that are getting entangled with those of the clients. So that's fun, isn't it? Right? And I think this is what I mean when I say, like, this is the work of our work, is that when we can kind of understand and untangle from the ways that self-doubt is showing up in our practice and in our business, you know, everything starts to shift. That really is the work of our work. And it's this opportunity to really grow and develop that I think a lot of us get bored with this work because we end up doing the same kinds of things, right? And what I want you to see, hopefully you're starting to already experience this, is when you really throw yourself into this work in particular, it's like you're never going to run out of material to play with. Right. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that we need to be healing 24/7, because I think that's dull as well. Right. But if we want to expand our self-concept to hold more, to do more, more is given to us. And that means that we're going to end up on our growth edges. Right. Where is self-doubt kind of showing up now? Yeah. So there's a couple of things to really use to play with this. In the module workbook, you'll find some information around seeking out supervision, what that looks like, around self-reflection. I highly recommend starting to use the SOAP analysis tool. As you're going through one-to-one sessions with people, it will really start to build a picture of where you're getting entangled with clients. It's incredibly helpful. And any supervisor you end up working with is going to love you to bring those along and say, hey, this is what I know about you know, the stuff I want to work on. So your places where you're getting entangled are really worthy of your attention. I think that our relationships with our clients is really the key to our own development and growth as coaches. And it's probably going to feel like us as you work through it. Like, I don't want to kind of sugarcoat it. I don't think sometimes it's as bad as we possibly believe it might be, but it isn't comfortable to recognize that the work that you adore and love and value so much is actually kicking your ass a bit, right? You're actually realizing, oh, there are limits to what I can do. And it's this weird paradox, right? That we are constantly kind of supporting ourselves and encouraging ourselves. And you might find you say all the time to yourself, I'm a really good coach. I'm really good at this. I know what good looks like for me and for my clients. But you may also be, you know, you can hold that and see, and there are areas for me to grow and develop. Like, I really want you to be able to hold the complexity of that paradox. So just because you've got a client who is, you're finding really tricky, that doesn't mean it's a reason to quit working with them. And it doesn't mean that anything's gone wrong. You're coming up against a growth edge almost inevitably. So I want us to do a little bit of self-reflection to kind of look at how this might be showing up for you. And then we're going to play with this in pairs. What I think has always been super surprising and a bit annoying, actually, if I'm totally honest, is that I was pretty comfortable talking about, and with my supervisor in the early days, I was pretty comfortable talking about the clients I found difficult to work with. When my supervisor at the time, when he said, well, tell me about the clients you've loved working with, let's see where you're a bit caught up in there. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? The clients I love and adore, they're a problem too, right? So we're going to look at this from both sides, because I want you to see that, you know, even when things are going right, there are areas for growth. It doesn't mean anything's gone wrong. It's just a way to know yourself as a practitioner in a deeper, richer way. Okay. So let's start there. I want you to just bring to mind a couple of clients that you have loved working with. All right, just write those names down. We're gonna just reflect a little bit on those relationships. Think of two or three clients that you loved working with. And just name them for yourself so you've got them in your mind. And I want you to just consider what made that coaching relationship successful. Like, what was it about that felt really good to you? It might have been something about the way that you showed up, they showed up, the outcomes they achieved. But what was it for you? What made that relationship successful? Just write some bullet points down for yourself. Next question is, how might each of those clients be meeting your needs? Needs for to be validated, adored, respected, seen as the expert. How are they meeting your needs? Did they need you? Did that feel really good? This is where it gets sometimes a little bit crunchy. Just notice any feelings of kind of awkwardness or discomfort. Okay, totally inevitable that this will happen. So how are these clients meeting your needs? Perhaps unspoken. And then the last question, just in this section, is how did this dynamic not serve the coaching? All right, so was there anything you didn't feel you could say or you felt you couldn't say? Perhaps you might have tried to preserve the relationship to the detriment of the coaching. But how did this dynamic not serve the coaching? And there just might be a vague sense that it didn't serve it, but you're not quite sure the detail. That's perfect. It's got a question mark. Not sure. Everyone got a reasonable list of info. You're starting to go, oh, okay, some things are coming up. That's interesting, right? So now we're just going to do a similar exercise, but very different questions about the clients that you may have found difficult in some way that were perhaps, I don't know, I use this word lightly, but triggering, right? Activating. There was a sense of we're not connecting, we're not aligned, right? So just maybe bring to mind a few people who sort of fit into that category. Clients that have been difficult to work with. Just list a couple of names, two or three is perfect. You can always come back and do this in a bit more detail if it feels good to you. But the idea here is we're just starting to surface some of these dynamics and these things that come up. And for each of them, just consider what assumptions did you make about each of these clients? Things like they're not ready to do the work, they want me to do all the work, they're not playing ball, they need to be different in some way. Like, what assumptions did you make about these clients? Irritated, bored, judgy, uncertain, all very, very inevitable, normal things to think about and feel about these kinds of clients. So the assumptions that you made about the client. And then I want you to look at each of these clients and think about, what did you make the tricky dynamic mean about you as the coach? What were you telling yourself about you and why this was happening? And the last question, what else could have been true? Remember, we want to thicken the narrative when we're thinking about this. Like, what else could have been true about this dynamic? Okay, has everyone got a reasonable kind of set of info in here? Some data you have gathered? Yeah? So what we're going to do is we're going to get into pairs and do a little bit of just chatting this through. what I want you to think about is what you've noticed perhaps about common themes, what you think might be going on. The things to pay attention to are the subjective and the objective, right? So what is just like you kind of staying in that story, and what is, no problem, Novi, and what is you kind of noticing the dynamic objectively, right? It's like, oh, actually, when this person popped into my radar and I was coaching with them, I kind of felt like I didn't know how to help them. So I could see that I was getting entangled in these ways, right? Or this person didn't seem to want to do any of the kind of homework assignments. And my coaching school had told me that homework is everything. What do you do when they don't do it, right? So I just want you to kind of play with what you notice about what's subjective, i.e. what you think and feel about it, and what's objective, like just some of the contextual elements that you can just detach yourself from and notice with your healthiest, wisest, oldest self what might be going on. Yeah. So Norvi had to jump off, so she's going to come back at 5, but that means we've got a slightly mismatched group. So what we could do, because with this just the 5 of us, let's do this as a big group, if you're up for it, and do some sharing, and we can just sort of see what comes up for everybody. So who wants to kind of start? What are you noticing about subjective and objective stuff that's coming up? Yeah, Iris.
I'm not so sure. I don't think I've untangled to the subjective objective level yet.
But, okay.
Some things that I really noticed in terms of the difference between the two groups of people I loved working with and people that I felt were difficult was that it really seems to relate to my self-doubt archetype, which is the altruist. So like needing to be needed and having deep relationships with people. And so the clients who are very, like, who are willing to go deep, to be vulnerable, but also who validate and like clearly respect that, you know, I'm an expert in this. Those are the ones where I almost feel free to coach and just do my thing. And then I've had one client in particular, who was super rational and very upfront all the time about wanting results. And that just, yeah, I've just really realized how that makes me feel not safe, and like how, because he wasn't willing to go deep and kind of kept me at a distance, how that made me feel like, oh, maybe I'm not doing this right. But then I flipped it on him and was like, well, you're not giving me time to do my work. So it really is quite messy. And it's interesting to realize it, because I can see that in the good clients, there are some, you know, genuinely helpful things, like having clients who are open to learn and things like that. But there's definitely also loads of entanglement about needing validation. So it's quite exciting to realize that, hey, maybe this could be different.
Yeah, I love that so much. So you've got this real kind of clarity around there's a sense of safety in being needed and being seen as the expert. That gives you some freedom. And when someone is a bit more closed off and a little less vulnerable, you kind of get into this place of something's wrong.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel quite safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. Nice. Thank you for sharing, Iris. It's really cool. Anyone else want to share what's coming up? Let's have it. We can just go around the circle if you want. Fiona, do you want to share next?
So Nicola and I have been knocking this one backwards and forwards a bit, but I get entangled with people who have a lot of bystander because I just want them to do stuff. And actually what they might need is more support around experimenting with making some decisions instead of actually doing some stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been a huge thing for me, and I really kind of feel like I'm just on the edges of unpicking what that means and how to work with it in a more, I don't know, the word that comes to mind is responsible, like working with that in a more responsible way.
Yeah. What do you make it mean about you when you're working with clients who are bystanding?
What I've made it mean in the past, I feel like I'm now sort of moving this, but a lot of around like how I can't help them. Like, well, until you're ready to do something, I can't help you.
Yeah. 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 I love it so much. Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if you folks feel this too, but I think a lot of the coach training I've had in the past is basically people need to be ready, right? They just need to really be ready. What I have found is that actually people want to be ready, because they've recognized that would really support them, but they're just not, because they have these protective mechanisms that are longstanding. So the work of our work then becomes, how do we support you to get ready? And it's like, you know, we remove the pressure of you needing to do anything for a start, right? Like, let's create the conditions where you can just play around a bit, and the relationship that we have will create those trusted conditions that you can feel safe to just make some decisions and take the smallest step in the session right now with me holding your hand sometimes.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So good, Fiona. I love it. What about the ones that you love working with?
So what I've really enjoyed about them is their openness and willingness to play. And often they sort of, one in particular really early came up with this great metaphor about like her sort of phoenix energy and how she was going for a really big job.
Nice.
And it was just so fun because we just kept coming back to it. And so it felt really fun and easy. And I think that's the need it was meeting for me, was it felt easy. She just took everything on, she did everything, she like was willing to open up the big bucket of crazy and have a rummage around in there. Yeah. Sorry, in the room interruption. Yeah, and so it was something about feeling like it was easy, which made me feel like I was doing it right. Like, this is it, I'm doing it right. Nice. I'm being a good coach.
If it's easy, I must be doing it right. Which conversely, if it's hard, I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice work on your healthy adult self there, just pulling that out of a hat. Yeah. Beautiful. So it's a really kind of interesting dynamic to play with, right? The ones that feel trickier and harder are kind of in stasis, don't feel safe to make a move. The ones that feel easier, it's like, it's validation, I'm doing it right. And so it's like you're kind of double dipping into that hardness almost. Yeah.
And it's funny because I have quite a few in the middle where actually, you know, there have been some sessions that have been easier or harder, but where they've got the result that they came for. And so like session by session, I didn't have so much of that dynamic, but at the end I was a bit like, that seemed quite like sort of, it was a bit challenging at times, but actually they really got what they wanted. And I think that gave a sort of more grounded sense of actually, I felt like I did something right there, rather than the like, this is so easy. Yeah. Vibe of it being about good coaching.
Amazing. And I think one of the questions I ask in my like pre-coaching questionnaire is, what are the unspoken expectations you have of me? Because sometimes that can be really fun to play with, right? Like, because if people might say none, and then you can kind of go, hey, three sessions in, I'm wondering if this is one of those unspoken expectations. Because we talk about the thing we're talking about. But that can be really fun. And sometimes people will say, oh, I just want you to tell me what to do, right? Just give me the answer. And it's like, cool, how great to know that that's where you're coming at this from. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, beautiful. Nice. Thanks, Fiona. That's really good. Yeah. Yeah, Iris.
I've got a question about the whole needing coaching to be helpful bit, because obviously people sign up with us because they want something, right? Some kind of change. And there is a responsibility to deliver something. But it also seems like a great way to entangle. And I know I do it because I saw such a specific result with my productivity routines. And I almost can't even think about what it would be like if I wasn't attached to their productivity changing in a certain way. So I was just kind of wondering, like, how you think about this, like what would be a healthy adult way of approaching the fact that, yes, they are paying you for something and a change. And sometimes it is going to be difficult. So what do you make of that? How can you approach that without having your whole self-worth tied up in it? While at the same time, I'm also still walking away thinking, yeah, this was helpful.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think what you're quite beautifully characterizing is what rescuing feels like.
Yeah.
Right? But it wears a noble cloak, right? It wears a very noble cloak. It's my job to change your behavior.
Mm.
That's what you've come for. That's what you're paying for. So I'm going to take that on. What I love is, sorry, I didn't bring my whiteboard in here today because I didn't think you would need it. But what I love, I'm just going to draw this very quickly, is the coaching kind of dynamic that CTI use, which is that's a triangle, apologies. But it's like down here is the coach, here is the coachee, and here is like the future self of the coach. And we're both working towards that. And there's another line from the coach to the coachee. So it kind of goes, like that. Right, so you've got the future self at the top, the coachee is down here. They're getting love from the coach and they're feeding the coach, the future self, their future self. The coach's responsibility is to look after the client's future self and the coachee, right? But notice that the dynamic is we're both in this together. Like any relationship. And if the coachee says, you know what, I've realized I'm not ready to make changes. It's like, okay, so what do you want to use this time for?
Okay. I think, like, I'm really running up against something here because I'm like, but they need to change. That's what they came for.
Yeah. And I would just offer they need to keep themselves safe, or they need to feel safe. Yeah. Now, and they will, when they feel safe enough to make a change, the change will happen. And so part of the dynamic, I think, well, the responsibility that we are, or rather the responsibility that we can take for the dynamic is to help the client feel safe. What I want just to offer, right, is if you've got someone who has a protective system, which is highly correlated with a scapegoat, to try and make them more productive without creating some safety around their sense of overwhelm is just going to compound that overwhelm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe what I'm realizing is that my whole setup of who I work with and the problem I help solve is just ripe for entanglement because people basically come and say, save me. I have been this way all my life. My life is about to fall apart because I procrastinate. So please save me. And then that triggers all my, of course, I'm going to like, let's do it. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, there is safety and it is a good relationship, but there's probably something about boundaries and entanglement and feeling like, yeah, if it doesn't have exactly this end result, then it's not good. And
I think it may even be as simple, deceptively simple, right, as shifting the belief from my job is to save you to my job is to help you create the conditions where you can save yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So when a client says, I need you to save me, you can say, well, that's not the business I'm in, because you are a functioning adult and you have all of these resources at your disposal. I'm going to help you discover what they are so you can take care of you, because I'm not going to be in your life forever.
Yeah.
I want you to have those resources available to you no matter what happens.
Yeah. But I think one thing that is quite exciting to think about with all this entanglement stuff is that I can already see that if I could entangle a little bit and have some new boundaries or different things about how we work together, then how it could just make the whole work feel way lighter, and it would take so much pressure off of it, because the entanglement is what makes it so heavy. And I think in the past I wouldn't have called it entanglement. I would have just been like, oh, it's the pressure of the job or something.
Yeah, but that's
very different.
Well, and it's exactly that. It's automatic. It feels, this is just the facts. Mm-hmm. This is just the pressure of my job. These are the clients I'm working with. And now that we're shining a light on this to see, oh, it's the dynamic that I'm helping to create.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much hope and freedom in that. Like, I'm really sensing you're kind of going, oh, hang on, this could all change, right? and that is beautiful. Like, that's the first step, I think, is to really shine a light on, what is it about this dynamic that feels exhausting to me, that feels hard, that feels difficult? Where am I throwing that difficulty, hard exhaustion onto the client and saying, you're responsible for it? It's like, as soon as we go, oh, no, I could just lead this differently, opportunities for how to do that will present themselves.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Awesome. Thanks, Iris. I could talk to you all day about your lovely clients. So fun. Nicola, do you want to share what's coming up for you?
Well, certainly there's some themes in the room that I can relate to for sure. And I guess what I noticed is that like the example of clients I really enjoyed working with, there was sort of like probably they're a little more in some ways, like a little bit more similar to me. And there's like an ease of rapport, and like probably like I like the ones who are pretty reflective, introspective, like they quite enjoy meaning making together. And then like, as some others described, like the ones who are like, they are doing homework and they're getting results. It's quite energizing for both of us to witness them kind of moving forward. And I also, not so much like being needed, but I think like almost like intimacy needs, like I feel enjoyed, I feel appreciated, I feel like they're kind of resonating with my values and worldview. So just like there's a lot of mutual enjoyment relationally.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think, what, like, where might this not serve? Like, I don't think there were big things where like, oh, I so value the kind of relational vibe that I'm avoiding a reflection. But I was like, it almost might be more slippery. Like, do we have some similar strategies and blind spots that like we're totally missing some of the work that might actually help them in some pretty powerful ways? Like, that's my guess and curiosity. And then there's a definite theme of the ones I found challenging. And I noticed that like I am making more meaning about them and a little bit more judging them than me, but when I'm trying to pull it apart. So what I noticed is like, I came up with three people. One of them, and I feel like some of it is not all, like one of them, I think, was pretty strongly struggling with kind of low grade, still functional, but depression. And we named it at the time as well. And then likewise, another one, and we were really transparent right from the go, like in terms of from a trauma lens, like some of that like used pot quite chronically. So that compensation, that kind of strategy. And we talked about the parameters included that he would continue to have therapy. Like, I just had my own spidey sense right at the front, like pretty low functioning. And what he wanted to work on was pretty basic, light daily routines and stuff. Anyway, I guess what I notice is like the feelings for me that arose were kind of, maybe I'm feeding off a little bit with Iris here, but like, it felt like I'm falling into a little bit rescuing, and it feels like heavier lifting. It feels like my expectations are kind of like, I do want forward movement for you. If this is working well, that kind of, you'll be getting results. And I love the ease, like when Fiona said, when it almost feels like things are just humming along, that's more, I find it more satisfying. And so what I noticed was like, yeah, there's just something there about taking on more responsibility, and because like a little domino of what I'm assuming it should look like. And if it's not, then starting to try to motivate more and do more. And that then what I guess I'm still left with is curiosity. Like, I think if I'm like judging them, it's a little bit like, oh, I just need to work with higher functioning people. Like, that's the truth. It sounds kind of judgmental maybe, but that's sort of the like, oh my God, just like, I need to avoid this in the future.
What if that's true, Nicola?
Well, that was one of my questions. What else could have been true? Well, maybe they really would have been better served by therapy. And that's like, with all three of the ones I chose, it's like intuitively, I really wondered if coaching is going to be the best fit. Like, so it's interesting just to notice.
Yeah.
And so that's one question. And so for with one of those examples, when he didn't follow through with kind of his side of the contract, like that was my expectation. And I was upfront. I am concerned when it's this level, da, da, da. And the truth is, as our contract went on, he didn't continue to go to therapy. And I allowed us to continue the work, even though I was noticing, oh my God, you're still struggling with just your bedtime. Like, it sounds silly, but like,
And this is, I think, I guess this is one of the places where that compulsion to rescue is met by the energy of our clients, right? It's like, I don't know, it makes me think maybe the law of attraction is a thing. I don't really think that, but you know what I mean? It's almost like we say, hey, if you're really struggling and probably need therapy, I'm the coach for you. Right? And actually, the way I like to sort of make sense of our role on the mental health spectrum, right, is that we work with people who are already functioning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have a pretty solid base level of functioning, because what we are requiring of people necessitates that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not actually saying this is the time you go to bed every night. That is something that is best served by therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's some kind of just like a basic kind of well-being thing that needs serving there. That's not necessarily what coaching is, I don't think. So it's kind of like when you say, oh, so I had these three clients and they all had that heavy feeling for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe what else is true? These are not the clients for me, and someone else needs to serve them.
And then the one that I have now, which is so interesting.
Wonder what that feels like, Nicola. Like, just to go, oh, these aren't the clients for me. Like, well, what does it feel like to say no?
Okay, that's good. Okay. So two things come up. It's almost like a mixed feeling. On the one hand, there's relief. On the one hand, it's like, good, you will be better served. And then maybe like a little bit of a part that's like, that feels, I'm trying to feel it. Like, is it a little disappointment or like a fantasy, like you're saying, like that I could be such a nuanced coach who can work quite well in the Venn diagram of sort of a real therapeutic sensitivity, but still honoring ethics and coaching. So maybe a little bit of that, like letting go of being that. But honestly, I have a feeling I'm going to sit with that in the big picture. I think there's more relief because it wasn't like, and even with the one, like it's interesting, the one right now is seeing a concurrent therapist, major complex PTSD in ways that make total sense.
Yeah.
And so it was almost like, we're going to hope that there's room. It's to work on some of like, just being able to do some of the like almost like hobbies and meaningful goals and a bit less of passive behaviors. Like it's not marijuana. It's not something like that, but just sort of like struggling with basic, this is where I want to put my time. And I just end up doing more video games and shows, but it's got that same faux compensation. And I guess what I'm noticing right now is like this month just sort of went AWOL, and I'm struggling because there's a part of me that has compassion for the resistance, like just can really understand. But I've thought about the entanglement part of like, am I avoiding saying something? Am I, that part almost is struggling around what's the boundaries. Like I'm so attuned to the resistance that I don't want to, like something, how do I also hold, I don't know. It just, it's tricky. It feels like
what you're describing, this healthy self
is small.
And what you're describing is a group of clients collectively who are operating from a survivor cell.
Exactly. Very much so.
They are,
and
not
it's so high.
They're not coachable.
That is, when you see it in such an obvious way, because I think I really have empathy. I'm not making a big personal story, but it's too, there's like, it's almost like proportionally. They're just right now, there's not enough consistent access to their healthy adult self.
So can you hold these two things to be true?
Okay.
My clients are not coachable and I can have empathy for them.
Yes. Especially the one right now, I absolutely do. The other ones I was a bit more frustrated with, truthfully. But this one, I'm not.
My clients are not coachable and they are therefore better served by another practitioner.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and it's funny because I wondered if we needed to have that check-in where, do you find too, it's almost like there's other ways with this one where in many ways there are things that look like potential for a good fit. But if he can't right now, then it's almost like you need to just stay with your therapist and those other modalities. He already has that in place.
Yeah.
You could explore and come back at another time? Like, do you know what I mean? Is it like hard line?
I would say you have some choices here. What I would encourage you to experiment with is letting someone go.
Yeah.
My sense is that could be a huge area.
Yeah.
Letting someone go with a lot of compassion.
Yes. And interestingly, I really, with this one, I feel major compassion. Yeah. It all makes complete sense. And especially being in this course, I have so much more of a framework of resistance. It makes complete sense.
Yeah.
And even what we edged on, we had done a belief buster. It's not necessarily surprising to me. I think just in doing some illuminating protective beliefs, it's still getting too close to trauma self, survivor self. Like, whereas I'm like, that's actually felt like progress, but it's like, it seems hard for me to not interpret that was already too much.
Yeah. So he's in survivor self, not coachable.
Okay.
And so this is the thing, unless you let him go, this is the dynamic you're going to be not working with, right?
Yeah. And so, again, overanalyzing a little bit, I'm trying to do all this work and what does it mean?
And you came on that very simple truth, right? Maybe these are not the clients for me. Maybe I don't have to work with clients who are really hard work. Maybe I'm not going to attract any more uncoachable clients. That might make my practice feel more fun. Call me crazy.
And with all of them, I'm pretty good at having that intuitive. I feel like I'm going to maybe be braver to say at the upfront, like, and I'll find my language because I'm not trying to judge them. I don't want it to sound condescending.
Nobody has to be wrong, right? He gets to go work with another practitioner. You get to make your offer more appealing to the kinds of people you actually want to work with.
Yeah. Okay, I may write in the reflection, but that'll be interesting. Just a little bit of the nuance, like if he comes back, like I don't think I've never done that to say this, like I need to, you know, I almost feel like, that's going to be new to figure it out. So I'll do some digesting and I may show up on the reflection board, but I really appreciate this. Mostly it feels actually extremely liberating, honestly.
That's the key. You know, it's in your healthy self because it's like the weight is lifted, right? That's what it's supposed to feel like.
And I already know. Anyway, this is good. I'm going to take this.
Perfect. Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. You don't have to work so damn hard.
And they won't either. It'll be a win-win, right?
They're going to be all around. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Nicola. Charlotte, do you want to share? What's going on?
I was just like nodding along to everything that everyone.
Yeah, it's like that, right?
Yeah, and I think I've like for a long time recognized my tendency to like go into rescuer mode because it makes me feel like validated and like I'm helping and like they're facilitating these changes for clients. So it's been like a really intentional.
I just want to say, like, for everyone, because this is the common thing, right, is we're all great at rescuing. The way I make sense of that, and I think it is rife for us as practitioners, is that for me, rescuing is kind of the shadow of empathy, right? It's like we have this natural empathy that attracts us to this work. We love other humans and we want them to reach their potential and it's no accident, right, that you get a nice, healthy shot of empathy in your system and suddenly you're like, I want to work with people. Not everyone does. And then I think at some point, because we get these skills and this way of looking at humans, we have this compassion that is bigger than the average bear's, and then it tips over into this kind of shadow of rescuing.
Mm.
So it's totally, totally shared, common, understandable. And it's like, I need to kind of pull back a little bit and look at that. So I love that you're adding to the empathy shadow stuff, Charlotte. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of reassure everybody. This is what it is, right?
Mm, definitely. And there's a part of me that, and I think this comes into like my growth as a coach. So like this time last year I was wrapping up my ICF whatever it is letters accreditation stuff. And it was like so much like you cannot be a directive coach to be a good coach, like at all. And I sat with that for like the best part of a year going, but I feel stifled because it's like for me, a lot of my clients are in such a like ADHD style pickle that they actually need someone to say, do you know what? You could try this. How would that feel? And so that actually has become an essential part of my coaching.
Amazing.
Because it's what those clients need. Right. And it's the struggle of, I guess, leaning into trusting myself that I'm going to do no harm by directing a little bit. And it feels like really like awkward in many ways to go against that like investment that I made in my training, which told me, like the experts told me, to be a good coach, I have to not direct at all. And it's this thing of like also trusting my clients enough that they're not just going to do what they're told. They're going to consider what's offered to them and see how they can make that work for themselves. So this is like a constantly evolving beast, but I've realized that the clients I love to work with most are like, okay, yeah, I'm open to this idea as homework or like self-exploration, but I'm also going to do it my own way. And I think that's changed like over the last year. The clients that I was enjoying working with were the ones that were like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. That's going to really help. And very much like wanting to be rescued.
Yeah.
And now I get really frustrated on the flip side with the people who are just kind of going, oh no, I just want to be told what to do. And I think one of the things that's really highlighted that for me this year is I joined an organization to do pro bono coaching, to just like log as many hours as possible. And they are a company that get paid by companies to provide free coaching to their employees. So it's like a company perk, right? For the employees. But most of them come and they don't know what coaching is. They're just doing it because it's been offered to them. And they all want like mentorship or to be taught how to do stuff and consulting. And actually, like all of the negative feedback is like, I would have liked more tips on how to do this, or I'd have liked some more expert advice. And it's become really clear to me that I can't work with people who aren't willing to try stuff, because I become really frustrated. And that's the upside of that whole non-directive side. So that was what kind of like a thought download of everything scribbled down. But
and I guess what I'm observing your and what you've shared, Charlotte, is that this is like a real moment for your self-trust.
Mm.
Right? Like looking at, you know, and it's that question of what else could be true, right? Maybe ICF aren't all that neurodiverse in their approaches. I think they are incredibly reductionist in a lot of their approaches. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, I'm going to trust myself, my clients, my work, that I can, and my lived experience, that I can support my people. Looking at this idea of, oh, it's the clients that want this specific support around stuff, maybe that isn't best suited to a one-on-one coaching relationship. Maybe there's an opportunity here for you to create a standalone product that could serve a community in terms of like how to get stuff done with ADHD. That sounded patronizing, but you get what I'm saying? Like that might be that might be a great way to kind of still serve your people. But it's like, this isn't coaching. This is information from a coach with a coaching sensibility to support you, my people. And if you want that extra support, after you've done that, come talk to me, right? It's like we start to thicken the narrative around what's my role, what's my job, what does my business look like? Yeah.
Mm.
And it sounds like you've also got some stuff to look at around this role as a pro bono coach. Does that feel like an alignment?
Nope, I'm not going back. So I've got my surgery tomorrow and then I'm not going back.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel that I am serving those people best by continuing to be associated with this organization. And I'm going to feed back to them and say, I'm actually concerned that some people have had a session with me. They've not got what they wanted. And that might put them off coaching, full stop.
And because the expectations haven't been set by them.
Yeah, because they don't understand what they're going in for. And if they're like, oh, that didn't help, so coaching must be rubbish.
Yes.
You know, there are all sorts of, it could just not have been the right fit. They might not have understood. And I've really embraced educating people on how to make coaching work for them. Yeah. But some people are like, they're just because it's something that's given to them. They're kind of doing it for the sake of doing it. And they're like youngsters. A lot of these people are like early 20s, which is super cool to be part of that. But at the same time, what if when they get to their 30s, they're like, whoa, I actually really need help now, but coaching didn't help me.
Yeah.
So what's the answer? And, you know, it feels, there are a lot of great things about it as well. but it just, yeah, isn't kind of that aligned with me. And also it's now time for me to be like, okay, enough practicing. I can still do some pro bono stuff, but it doesn't need to be most of my coaching.
Yeah, everyone is like giving you a round of applause right now. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right? Not only are you going to better serve these potential clients, right, by giving, and that organization, by giving this very clear feedback, I just think about what this is going to do for your energy levels and how you can pour that into your future paying clients.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a whole like series of events that's been going on this year that's kind of coming to a head now. Okay. And it's super cool. And it's one of those things that, you know, I've always made those awkward, clunky conversations with clients not be about me. I've always been like, oh no, it's them. They didn't pick the right coach. But I think there's this middle ground in that actually also I haven't been as flexible in my approach because I didn't know how to be. And now faced with that again, there are other options which are maybe saying, do you know what, how are you feeling about this? Because, you know, you said you wanted X, we're maybe not moving towards that. Is this okay? Or would you feel better supported by somebody else? Or just going, do you know what, this is just the way it is with this client. And then there's no obligation to continue after our initial agreement. And all of these possible future realities that are in there that aren't just like, I wasn't the right coach for this person, they weren't the right person for me.
Absolutely. And I think there's something about this theme of trusting yourself that feels really on top for me. It sounds like it is for you too. What I think happens is the more we trust ourselves, the easier it is to trust other people. Right. So it's like now I noticed in myself when I really kind of came to really feel like I genuinely trust my potential clients to know if this is right for them. My job is never to convince them, and it's always to keep showing up, and they're going to either say yes or no. And none of that is a reflection on either of us. Nobody has to be wrong. Yeah. And it's like that trust in other people for other folks, for our potential clients and for our actual clients, is, I think it gets translated as respect. And there's nothing safer than feeling like you're respected as an adult. Mm-hmm. So it's like this fantastic kind of path is opening up, I think, for you to really claim this for you. It feels like it's very much, you know, prevalent for you right now.
Yeah.
So good. Love it. Thank you, Charlotte. Rowena, do you want to share what's coming up for you?
Yeah. Hi. Just quick caveat, my phone might ring and I will need to take it if it does. But so I'll just exit stage left. But yeah, what, lots of resonance with what's already been said. But I think one of the things that comes up for me when there's a kind of more of a jarring relationship is when something competitive comes out in me. And I don't really know how to describe it beyond that, but it's something that kind of that the client will say, which will kind of, yeah, just make me enter more of a competitive space with them. Sorry, I'm not articulating that very well, but
I'm wondering if you're describing almost like arguing with them.
Yeah, no, I don't know. It's maybe more about having a kind of sense of what the roles are in the sort of room, if you like, and whether sometimes those roles are where the middle of the Venn diagram is just doesn't quite work.
Give me an example.
Oh, that's really, really hard. Because I'm mainly drawing on kind of student work here, right? Solely drawing on student work. I suppose it's when for example, when a crude example would be being talked over, I think. Things like that would makes me kind of like, okay, where's the relationship here? Where's the boundary? And that is more clear cut in the sort of student relationship, I suppose. And so, yeah. Yeah, and it brings up a sort of competitive nature here in the room for me. I don't know whether it's kind of felt the other side.
What do you think? What do you think you're competing with?
Maybe expertise.
Right, because you're coaching with PhD students, right?
Mm.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that makes some sense, right? Because I imagine that there is a lot of identity caught up in being an expert.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yep.
So I'm wondering, like, how might you respond to that before it happens? Right? Now you're starting to see this as a pattern.
Mm.
Like, even calling this out right at the start, you're doing a PhD. Only 10% of the population do this. You're smart. I imagine that's important to you, or words of that, you know, asking them how important that is to them. Mm-hmm. And saying, look, I just want to give you permission that you don't have to be the expert here.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And also kind of thinking about what was also true in your kind of what else could be going on is thinking that, you know, they're needing to sort of assert themselves. In that space, you know, you know, they're trying to keep themselves at the top of that 10%.
And I would say they are trying to keep themselves protected from the vulnerability that comes from not knowing.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But when your identity is about rational, you know, thinking based stuff, you probably are quite identified with thinking rather than feeling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Feeling could feel quite vulnerable. Like the idea of emotions could feel quite vulnerable.
Yeah.
I wonder if it even just helps you to see, oh, when someone is being difficult, what they're actually saying is, I'm in difficulty.
Yeah.
Because I think competitiveness, any of that kind of stuff, is a form of judgment, and judgment can't survive with compassion. So as soon as you can find a way to go, oh wow, you're actually in some difficulty here, and it's like it will shift your energy and the potential responses that can come up, because you're not in that defend and protect mode yourself. You're not entangled with theirs.
Yeah.
You can come back to, how can I help support you?
Mm.
Even calling it out, it sounds like this is quite new. Sounds like this might feel a bit vulnerable. It's, you know, you're safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And interestingly, it's those, I think, that feel safe that I work most easily with. And I can, you know, you need an advice, like one of the things I find myself saying all the time is that you need to get comfortable with uncertainty for the next X amount of time, and 3 years, 6 years, whatever. And for those who can do that more readily, I find, you know, there's a kind of trusting space with, and therefore it feels easy. And those who are not good with that level of uncertainty for a prolonged period, you know, where they want to have this kind of assertion of expertise, or just show me how I can kind of tick the boxes and get through this, please. It's those.
But that's what they're used to doing, right?
Yeah. Give me the stuff, I'll pass the assessment. That kind of, you know, like we're all trained to do that as students. And when you're asking them to let go of that, it's really unnerving for them.
My sense is the earlier you call all of this out, right? Like, I even wonder if you listen back to this part of the call and write down everything you've just said,
yeah,
the sales page, right? It's like, this is not a tick box exercise. This mm-hmm. is not about how smart you are. I already know you're brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. This is about who are you being while you're in your life?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's
yeah.
holding you back? How have you learned to protect yourself? This is typically what I see as a coach for these folks.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's helping the client know before they've even started working with you that you already understand their reality.
Mm.
Even if it is like uncomfortable truths that they may not have revealed to people.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
The more comfortable you are with that, the safer they're going to feel.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. Yep. Thank you.
So, so welcome, Rowena. This feels like a beautiful thing to explore. What is all of the difficult behaviors and you know, terms of phrase and all the shit that comes out in sessions that make you feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. that could actually be the doorway into mm-hmm. how you can better support folks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I see that. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Rowena. It's so cool. Love it. I'm hoping this is helpful, like just to kind of air this, right? It's like, it's the stuff we don't really talk about as coaches, I think, as well. And, you know, especially when you're doing this, these two very complex tasks, running a business, being a coach, often we can kind of rest in the safety that, well, at least I'm a good coach, right? And so to kind of gently challenge that, like, yeah, but where are the areas of growth? Where am I maybe not showing up as the coach I know I can be or I want to be, who I'm becoming? It's like we really start to kind of claim and own that for ourselves, knowing can't be outsourced, can't hand it to the client, right? The beauty of this is it becomes the gateway into actually growing and developing. You by being with the stuff that feels uncomfortable and crunchy, you actually open up the door to the coach you want to become, the next level of your mastery in this work. Yeah, Nicola.
I mean, I'm loving all of this. And this is like PS. So this is pretty rare. I just noticed even this whole notion of, oh my God, I can just, like, if he's already said, I'm just thinking of this current one. He's already kind of just been gone for a month, like not sticking with a consistent two sessions per month. I just noticed this fantasy. I want good closure. I want resolution. Like, and I've done my due diligence, I think, just really two respectful notes, like just checking in. And I really felt solid. I did reflecting, like, but this is the radical thing. Like, Sass, he might not even, I'm just playing it out. He might not even show back up. And that's okay. Like, it's just so, it's such an anomaly. I want it to be beautiful. We do the whole thing and growth or even really good closure. But I sort of am realizing maybe that's still part of my, I want it to all be so, do you know what I mean? Like,
I so understand that. Look, and this is the thing, right? Can you own the closure?
Just on my own?
Even if he doesn't show up. For ooh. Right?
And like, I don't have to keep trying to get him and make something happen relationally. I can just do it.
Myth, right? That we need someone else to stay and do things for us to feel closure. Nope. You can just make a decision and keep practicing the beliefs that support you.
That's cool. It's just, it's another level of almost radical liberation. And I don't think it's like the beliefs, like, am I being neglectful? No, I don't think so. I really think, so I think you're right to just play with noticing the stories and then
very much.
That I get to also choose the beliefs and back to, I mean, I think I feel pretty solid actually, but even also the reminder back to supervision. If there's something that we really are tangly, that's where sometimes it's going to be so great to
exactly.
have a supervisor and
exactly.
work it through.
Exactly. I mean, I've been in supervision for 8 and a bit years of the 11 years I've been doing this. It is the single thing, apart from my graduate degree, supervision is the single most powerful tool I have in my armor. I'm actually starting a diploma in supervision in September because I feel like this is the next thing. It also means I can serve you all a bit better, because we do have ongoing monthly supervision and support calls in SBCA. So once you graduate, we keep hanging out, basically. but for me, it's like, this is the thing. This is the juice. It's really powerful work. I would encourage you to keep having these conversations in your practice pods. Like, let yourself be vulnerable with each other around the shit that's coming up for you in client sessions. Let that become one of the things that you start discussing and really kind of playing with. Don't shy away from it. You know, you can still protect the anonymity of your clients, all of that stuff. But it's about your experience. It really matters. Okay. We are finishing on time today, which I'm kind of quietly proud of. And we will be next week shift. So I will see you all next week. Okay. Take care, everybody. Thank you. Bye. Bye.